Hello, I'm Shane Malach.
And I'm Paul McCarthy.
And welcome to this episode of the I Am Impact podcast. Today we have Sunil on the call, who runs the Extra Money blog. And you can find this blog at extramoneyblog.com. And we invited him because he published some really, really interesting stuff on his site. And specifically, we want to talk about some of his niche site building strategies today. But before we do that, I want to hand over to you, Sunil, and can you give us like the quick introduction for people who've never heard of you before? Who are you, and what got you into writing about passive income and generating passive income and all that stuff?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, thanks for having me, guys. And appreciate what you're doing for the community on your website. So that's pretty good stuff there. As far as I'm concerned, my background is purely banking, financial services. I went to business school, obtained my master's degree, got involved with the banking and financial sector, did really well, obtained all the certifications I could. But then part of me was always craving for something more than that. And when I say something more really refers to not only money, but there comes a point in a person's life where, once you start making a certain amount of money, any incremental money in addition to that doesn't really add incremental happiness. So people start craving for other things such as freedom, the ability to spend more time with their family, friends, doing things they truly enjoy. And some people, even though when they enjoy their careers, they just want something going on the side to provide them with that extra security net for them and their family. So similarly, I was in a same boat, and I was looking for ways to diversify my income streams. I got involved in real estate investing. Had some successes there, had some failures, but it just became difficult with a consulting job, traveling all the time, being away from home. So eventually stumbled upon the online business model, tried a few things, even tried eBay, but was always more interested in establishing some sort of a business that could self-sustain itself over a period of time, more geared towards a passive income type model. And that's when I came across the niche site model, which, as you know, in the recent times has gone through quite an evolution. A lot of the fundamentals still work today. There are some changes that folks like me and whoever's interested in those need to adapt. But overall, that's sort of the evolution that's taken me from where I started to where I am today. As far as the blog is concerned, I talk about my journey, I talk about what has worked, what doesn't, and I spend most of my time today on the blog, considering that most of my other businesses online are pretty well established and do not require as much effort anymore to maintain. I still work on them, but as you know, there's a lot more effort and energy required to establish something. And once it's established, it's a lot easier to maintain on an ongoing basis. So short answer to your question, basically, the blog is the capstone project. It encompasses everything I've done, not only online, but offline as well.
Okay. And our niche sites, is that like currently your main other income source?
Yeah, so my portfolio of niche sites collectively bring me the most passive income of my entire. If I were to rank my passive income streams, mm-hmm. most of it comes from online properties that are generating revenues through multiple different sub-income streams within them. As you know, websites can be monetized in a variety of ways, and these websites are all monetized using a variety of different sub-income streams, as I call them, within each income-producing property.
Okay, and can you give us an idea, like can you give us like an overview? What's your approach when you set out to create a niche site? What are you thinking of? Is the, you know, is the end goal, for example, do you build a mailing list? Do you use AdSense? Does it depend on the niche? Can you kind of walk us through the very basic overview of your strategy with that?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to answer the second question first. You hinted towards AdSense. Typically, in the past at least, the strategy had always been, let's pick a viable topic, and I'll talk about what viable means in a minute. Let's pick a viable topic, let's build a business, let's start attracting traffic, and let's monetize it using a three-prong approach that, to me, is the easiest way to do so. And one of those prongs is advertisements. Slap on Google Ads on there. Number two, put on some affiliate offers. And number three, create some sort of a digital product such as an ebook or an audiobook and put it on there. Now, over time, that will evolve. People are going to contact you. Vendors are going to contact you interested in private advertising. So that's another stream. You may get involved in some other type of work, referrals, lead generation. Just depends on where that particular niche takes you. You have to be flexible in where you want to drive that in the future. The key is to establish it, get the traffic going, and after that, a lot of options will open up themselves to you. As far as my strategy in the past, it was always picking a topic mainly based on the arbitrage to be found in keywords, right? So keyword research dictates what the supply is, what the demand is, how many people are searching for that topic, right, how many people are competing in that area. So it was purely an arbitrage type approach. These days, I don't know if you've seen on my blog, but recently I have been talking about an authority site in the financial sector that I'm building something. I'm very close to a topic that's very near and dear to me that I feel I know inside out. The approach in picking that topic was completely different in that keyword research was a part of it, but that in itself wasn't the only strategy. So to bring this conversation full circle, in the past, it was strictly keyword based. Today, keywords are a part of it, but I don't start conducting keyword research until after doing several other things. For example, picking a particular topic that I feel I truly, genuinely know a lot about, where I can drive a lot of value to the end user, something that I have undying passion for, something that people out there, the potential market, has the discretionary income to spend on, not only interest, but a genuine need. So my new authority website is the CPA Requirements HQ website. People who are interested in the accounting and finance profession, for example, especially in accounting, need that CPA license or CA in some countries. Mm-hmm. In order for them to succeed in that profession, they need to pass that exam and get that licensure, that certification. So you can see it's not just a topic based on people's interest, but it's also based on their needs. It's something they have to, they must do. And the right. other component of it is people, your target market, need to have that discretionary income. Folks who are pursuing this particular career route generally have that discretionary income, especially to spend on something that's going to advance their career. So a lot of it goes into strategies, topic selection. Today, as we speak, a lot of it is also evaluating the marketplace. Is there competition? If there is competition, that's usually a good sign. There's money to be made. Are there books being offered? You know, are there products being sold? That just means people have the appetite and the money to spend on that kind of stuff. Whereas in the past, it was strictly, you know, which keywords are going to bring me the most traffic? Let me look at Google AdWords to tell me whether there is money to be made in simply displaying ads based on those keywords. If the answer was yes, it was something worth pursuing. Today, the ball game is completely different. So a lot more time and effort is required, not just on the planning phase, but also on the execution. As you know, sites today, search engines tend to favor larger, deeper, more broad, comprehensive sites.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there that I'd like to pick up on. But first, so just to clarify, you're saying that your strategy has evolved like this, basically out of necessity. So it's not just that it's more effective to do it that way. it's also just that like the old model doesn't work quite as well anymore, right?
Well, frankly, the honest answer to that question is the strategy today is really how business should be approached. A genuine business should really be approached in this manner.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, in the past, there was a lot of low-hanging fruit. There was a lot of quote-unquote easy money to be mm-hmm. made. So a lot of us who understand the online space and play in it, sort of ran and gravitated towards that model. If you can make money easier versus putting in a lot more time and effort, the natural human instinct is go grab the lower hanging fruit, without mm-hmm. thinking of the long term implications and the repercussions. Absolutely the wrong approach. It did work for a lot of people. It's still working for some people. I still have niche sites that are doing very well. The difference being, I would say a lot of folks, when they think and talk about niche sites, what they really mean is micro niche sites. To me, those are completely different, right? If you have a website with 5 to 10 pages, I mean, that would be, to me, a micro niche site. A lot of folks had sites 2 to 3 pages. I mean, very, very thin. My thinnest niche site today, I believe, if I remember correctly, has north of 20 pages. So, right. These are niche sites in the traditional sense that, yes, they're very, very narrowly focused on a particular niche, targeting specific keywords. But as far as the depth of the site or the size of the site, they're still reasonably sized, for a better term.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was also one of, I mean, I did a lot of the micro site thing as well, while the getting was good. But I experienced the same thing. It's like that model just doesn't really pay off anymore like it used to. Now, when you're building, oh, and the other thing I wanted to point out, which I really liked about this strategy, when you talked about the monetization, that there's basically from the outset, there's the idea of creating a product of your own, some kind of a report of your own, something of your own to sell there. I think that's a really good thing just to have like planned from the beginning, because you're automatically building a new and better asset than just having a site with ads on it. If you ever actually have something of your own to sell, that's a very good additional asset. And I think it automatically drives you towards providing more value.
Yeah, definitely. And, it's not as difficult as one may think. If you're already putting in the time and effort researching and putting together quality content for your niche site, you can repurpose and repackage that content in a chronological order and put it into a product format, such as a book. The other advantage, obviously, is once you have a book, you don't only sell that on your website. You can also distribute that through other platforms like, you have the Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble Nook, Sony, and all kinds of other things out there. Right. So, yeah, it's just about leveraging your efforts and trying to make the most out of it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Can you... One of the things that struck me as interesting is that is the way you go about researching and creating the content for the sites you build. Can you give us an idea of how you go about that when you found a topic? How do you put together that content?
Yeah, so a lot of that content is to the extent possible. If I know about that particular topic, I'll throw in as much of my own knowledge as possible. But many times when you're chasing keywords and you're chasing the money, a lot of topics will lend themselves that sometimes you have no idea about. Sometimes you don't mm-hmm. have any interest about those topics. So, it is my personal belief, whether this is right or wrong, and you'll hear a variety of arguments on this, nothing is truly unique and original on the internet unless it's your personal story, a personal anecdote, or a personal opinion, a feeling of yours. Mm-hmm. So as far as general material out there, right, if you have a website on green apples, you can have 1,000 different websites, and you will find some overlap between all 1,000 of them. Yeah. So, at the end of the day, it's really taking something, researching it, putting it in your own words, adding your own experiences, adding your own stories, and then finding, if you don't have your own stories and experiences, you can find ways to do that. You can get other people involved that are closer to that topic, and you can find those people all over the place. An easy an easy avenue for us to find them is blogs and forums. You have blogs and forums on every particular topic out there. If you're planning on creating a particular website on a specific topic, reach out to that audience, gather their feedback. A lot of content could be formulated just based on those conversations. So right. There's a, you know, there are a variety of ways to approach it. So, you know, I would say take, you know, pick an approach that's most comfortable to you. You know, whatever your strengths are, you play to them.
Okay. Have you, with your niche sites, have you experienced any like Google slaps? Have you, any of your sites just like been destroyed by a Google update?
Yeah, a few of them actually. You know, I've talked about a few of them on my blog. I have a few sites that initially, I believe Panda was before Penguin, correct?
So, yeah, yep.
So Panda, I mean, some of them were slashed north of 50%. I think I had one in the 60-65 range reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what happened over time is before Penguin came out, the traffic slowly rebounded and was on its way up. And then Penguin happened, and then I saw another steep drop. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from Penguin until today, where Google recently released the exact match domain and the advertisement algorithm, they have all kinds of things going on. But I've seen some sites weather the storm. I've seen some get hit, but then pick right back up. A handful of them have gotten hit and never picked back up. Whereas some of the websites, because I have such a large portfolio and I look at these and, you know, they were completely unaffected, and it's very hard for me to kind of to really determine what the root cause is, what are the parallels, what are the similarities that are causing a particular theme or trend that I'm seeing. So to answer your question, yes and no. I'm really all over the place.
I see.
I really cannot point at a particular root cause for either one of those actions.
Right. Yeah, with mine, I had quite a few really rubbish, like really rubbish websites that did really well before one of the Panda or perhaps the Penguin update, depending on which site, and they got destroyed. But I felt like, you know, they deserved to get destroyed.
Yeah.
And my higher quality sites, I mean, like my blog was completely untouched by all this. That seems fairly fair, but then again, I also know of many sites that, or I have a couple of sites that were slapped from the search results, but the sites replacing them seem to be a lot worse. So it is kind of sometimes kind of confusing trying to figure out what exactly the criteria are. Do you have anything where you go, okay, this is, you know, these are the steps I take to make sure that this site doesn't get slapped?
Let me give that one some thought. You know, no, other than, the obvious that's already out there, basically, you know, avoid duplicate content. You know, in the past, a lot of folks said there's some level of duplicate content that is acceptable. I try not to put any out there. But aside from that, you know, the obvious stuff, the black hats, you know, hiding links, hiding words behind a clear white background and keyword stuffing and stuff like that. You know, if you look at my meta tags on my niche websites, I never have more than 7 max. You know, I try to play within the guidelines Google has set forth. The only thing I could think of is, you know, I would say be careful when building backlinks. That approach is completely different today than what it used to be in the past. So diversity and I would say reducing the frequency and increasing the diversity and your backlink efforts would probably serve best.
Okay. And what can you reveal some of your backlink sources? Where do you go for backlinks these days?
Yeah, so for me, it's not changed, frankly. I mean, it always has been the some of the top common article directories that you'll commonly hear about on the blogosphere. You have the eZine articles, the Go articles, an article dashboard, Article Alley, those resources. And then when it comes to Web 2.0 properties, Hub Pages is one where we really focus on. We used to focus on Squidoo, but, you know, they're becoming tougher and tougher in their requirements to match and grow that lens. Otherwise, they're going to deactivate it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really nothing. I don't feel I can contribute resource that's probably not already commonly talked about in terms of backlink building.
Oh, and I think that's actually important that you say that, because it's, what you're saying is essentially you build good sites and you get links just like you used to get links before without doing anything crazy or spammy or anything like that, and that still works. And I think that's a pretty important point to make right there.
Yeah, I'd say so. In the past, though, I would say we were a little more aggressive in terms of maybe I would use, let's pick one, Go Articles, and you'd mm-hmm. see 20, 30, 40 different articles on there. I mean, all unique content, but nonetheless, you'll see a number of them all pointing mm-hmm. to my site, whether it's the homepage or the deep pages. Mm-hmm. What we've done today is we've kept it to 2 articles max per resource. Definitely reducing on the frequency and definitely focusing more on the diversity. So instead of submitting to 10 article directories in the past, you know, we focus on 25 or 30 today. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, we're reducing the number per directory. So it, in terms of total output, the total work that goes into it, it doesn't really change that much. You're just diversifying and spreading yourself broader.
I see. Okay. Okay, I think Paul wanted to ask you a few more mindset-related things. So, Paul, do you want to jump in with that?
Actually, I wouldn't mind just throwing another question in the internet marketing mix, if that's all right, just before we go into mindset. So one of the things, Sunil, on your blog that I really like is that you share content about how you build up your niche sites, and you can see these sites evolving over a period of months. And it's clear for anybody reading that this is a long-term vision for you. And it helps, I think, set expectations for people reading that, because a lot of people have been kind of they've been influenced by this whole make $1 million in the next 3 minutes kind of attitude towards it that's in internet marketing or has been in internet marketing for the last 5-6 years. And I think what you do is you set their expectations really well, which I think is very important. So just out of interest, when you create a new niche site, what are your expectations in terms of getting that initial traffic from the search engines and then ultimately profiting from it?
Sure. I mean, I've been at this 4 years now, and I'll tell you, in 4 years, I've still not made $3 million, I don't think. So that's a quick and easy and surefire way to set yourself up for failure. Mm. So, you know, I would say, obviously, the game today is completely different. Mm-hmm. It was a little easier, maybe a little quicker to get there in the past. But when I say quicker, quick or slow, it's all relative, right? In the online space, quick can be a matter of 2 to 3 years before your website starts bringing in $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 of passive income. Mm-hmm. In the past, a lot of my niche sites at the 6-month mark would start bringing in collectively, you know, $1,000, a little under, a little over on a monthly basis. Now, that also assumes that a lot of work goes into that site in those 6 months. And I really mean a lot of work. I mean, mad content creation, mad backlinking efforts. I mean, all sorts of things. Something's got to give, right? You either put in a lot of effort or you give it a lot of time and put in a little effort consistently over time. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, however, whatever approach you pick, just understand that, you know, consistency and persistence, I think, matters more than anything. Mm-hmm. Doing something repeatedly, regularly, over a course of time. In the past, that may have been 6 months. Today, as we're seeing, some people are going at it 12 months, 18 months, and still seeing very mediocre results, which a lot of times discourages them. So mm-hmm. a lot of people, because they enter with a mindset thinking that, I'll put up a blog out there, put some articles, and in 3 months I can, you know, probably make $500, $1,000. It can happen, but, you know, likely that's not the case. And what happens when you think about it like that going into it, a lot of people run out of time and patience because their expectation doesn't match the reality. So those who do not have inherent challenges, in that it's simply more difficult today, given the changes that we're having to go through. When I talk about that, I mean the algorithm changes that search engines are imposing on us. So I would say my advice would be drop the expectations, right? Go into it thinking that it is something, you know, if it turns fruitful, then so be it. But if it doesn't happen, at least if it doesn't happen as fast as you think it would be, you know, let it go. I've written a very comprehensive article on the topic of internet business. It's not for those who are desperate. If a person is going to drop their job and go into it full time, you know, they may be disappointed because there are a lot of variables that are beyond your control, right? So you may be doing all the right things, but if things don't pan out, it's easy to get discouraged. And it's specifically easier to do that when you read about other people succeeding and making money. It's just, you know, what is that expression? It's like throwing salt on a wound. So I'd say drop all the expectations and just go at it and let it dictate how fast it turns profits and where it takes you.
One thing that's really
interesting approach. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about it like that, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things. One is, if you're going to take this approach, then like we spoke about earlier, you have to have that commercial viability check in the first place, so you don't spend 18 months building a site, gets load of traffic, and then you can't make any money in the back end.
Yep, agreed.
And the second thing is, I had something I was wanted to ask you about, but it's gone completely out of my mind for some reason. Let me go straight onto the mindset question. So on your blog, you said you're a big believer that the biggest thing hindering you or anyone else's success online is doubting yourself. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, before you had any success with internet marketing, how did you create and reinforce a positive mindset when you didn't have any success behind your belt?
Yeah, so I think it's a big part of that answer is really surrounding yourself with people, material, and information that proves it to you that, you know, these kinds of things, whatever your objectives and goals are possible. So I have always and still do a lot of reading. Yeah, I'm a big nerd when it comes to that kind of stuff. I love books, informational, educational books of all sorts, a lot of motivational leadership type books. A lot of these help. You may not realize it, but piling on book after book just adds a lot of stuff to your subconscious, which further reinforces positive energy. So I used to, and I still do, attend a lot of training, a lot of leadership events. And what happens is, repeatedly over time, as you just get exposed to this type of stuff, your reality, your perceived reality, starts changing, at least conceptually. And I think that's the biggest challenge, because as your mindset changes, it automatically leads to positive action, positive results. I know it sounds good when we talk about it, but the reality of it is it works. And that's exactly, you know, when I reflect back and I look at my personal evolution, that's exactly what's happened. You know, I've had great exposure to, I think the other thing that helps too is my professional background. Mm-hmm. Because of what I used to do, I had a lot of exposure to multimillionaires and even billionaires running Fortune 500, 100 companies. Mm. So, you know, whether you look at people who are running successful corporations or successful businesses, whether it's online or offline, there are a lot of very common habits and parallels that you can see in each successful person, right? Mm. There are some different nuances, but at the end of the day, the fundamentals to succeeding in what you're doing really boils down to those handful of things that these guys possess. So same thing in any industry, right? Internet, offline, doesn't matter. To see those successes and to be amongst them is to believe. You have no option but to start believing it. Your reality becomes like that. It's funny because in the corporate world, we used to talk about, when we used to hear things like, oh, the average household income in the United States is, you know, $45,000. That means husband and wife working full time making $45,000. Mm. I just could, I used to just not relate to that. I couldn't, even to this day. I mean, that's reality and that's the majority. But when your reality in the office is being surrounded by people that make $150,000 a year on average, that becomes your reality. So for you, it becomes very difficult to relate to, you know, you couldn't believe the fact that households are making 50,000. That's the average. Now, you know, you become who you hang out with. That's why we, you know, people say you pick your friends, you pick your company, you pick your alliances carefully. You know, if nothing else, if you cannot do anything else, my advice is pick up books and start reading them one book after another. Learn constantly. Never stop that. You know, the more you know, the more powerful you are. And frankly, the more wealthier you become in theory, in mind, it all just comes down to execution. You just start, you just have to start executing to get those tangible dollars flowing. But, you know, honestly, just by immersing yourself in it makes you wealthier from a mindset perspective.
Yeah, that's something I've personally had experience with, whereby I've just repeatedly exposed myself to personal development, kind of motivational texts, and it really does actually help me get through, especially if I'm at a really large project and I'm trying to grind through it, but maybe I've hit a negative, or I've had a bad day or something like that. Just even just half an hour of reading a text can really just change, just uplift you and get you back on the horse, so to speak.
Yeah, it totally does. The other thing too, I'd say, is look at past successes and dissect those successes, whether it's your personal success or pick somebody that you look up to and look at their background. I mean, what were they before? And a lot of times you'll find, you know, majority of entrepreneurs out there are self-made. They're not, in fact, people that inherit wealth a lot of times mismanage it and lose it. But those who have, you know, the self-made folks out there, you look at their examples and, you know, they're also human beings. They live and breathe just like us, right? If they've done it, why can't you do it?
Yeah. So the next thing I wanted to ask you is, you're clearly a master at getting through large projects. You've obviously done a huge amount of work to get these niche sites set up over the past few years. And I know that sometimes people really struggle to keep themselves motivated to see something through right to the end. And of course, if you don't see something through to the end, you don't get paid for all the work you've done up until that point. So my question for you is, what is your mentality when you're undertaking a really large project and you can't see the end in sight? And what do you focus on to keep yourself motivated and not become overwhelmed?
Yeah, great question. And just to give you some comfort, there are some projects I started years ago, which are still haven't been consummated because the list of to-dos keeps growing and growing.
Yeah.
I think the key there is it's very important to sit down, plan, and strategize and visualize it end to end. But another key, I think, in addition to that, is your ability, one, to be flexible, because curveballs are going to be thrown at you right throughout the process. We're seeing that with search engines today when it comes to the online space. But I think the other most critical aspect of it is the ability to think of it not as a always keep your destination in mind, your end goal, but at the same time, think of the project not as one big project, but break it down into several small projects or different tasks, and give yourself milestones and measure yourself, measure your progress in that. Make sure you're meeting each one of those milestones one step at a time, taking one task at a time and focusing on that task and that task alone. Because if you don't, and you start thinking about the whole spectrum from end to end, it becomes very easy to get overwhelmed. And what happens is you sit there on your chair and you keep staring at the screen, you'll get paralyzed at the end of the day, right? You're not going to get anywhere. Take the spectrum and, you know, slice it up in different milestones, have a handful of goals to do per day, and just monitor your progress. And this works whether you're working on something yourself or you're having a team or VAs or some sort of an outsourcing resource work on it. The approach doesn't change, right? So, I mean, take it in bite-sized pieces. And make sure you're always monitoring and tracking too, because it's easy for things to sometimes take a segue and go in another direction. So it's always important to keep that end destination in mind, so you know that each milestone is really helping you move forward, contributing towards that end destination.
Man, that is such great advice. I tell you, this is an ongoing battle that I have with myself, and that is that I always tend to look at the big picture in terms of, oh, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this, and then all of a sudden you're overwhelmed, too much work to do. And like you say, you just sit there and you think, oh, there's just so much to do. I don't know what to start on. I've just been there so many times. And the other thing that you mentioned, where you remind yourself of your achievements, is something that I quite like to do as well, is that at the end of the week, I'll sometimes write down what's been achieved in the week, and you actually kind of forget how much you progress from week to week. You don't realize that, you know, last week you didn't have 20 or so articles on your site, or you were so far behind where you are now. And once you see that progress, it's reinforcement.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the reason for that is a lot of us, especially entrepreneurs, have the tendency to want everything right now because we have it in our minds. In our minds, we're all multi-millionaires. It really just comes down to executing and doing the work to get there. But each one of us already in our minds is super wealthy. And if you think about one reason why thinking about previous successes really helps, especially for me, is a lot of us think that we're racing against time, that time is running out, that life is short. But, you know, the opposite is true, actually. Life is really long, and there will be plenty of opportunities to succeed. So who cares if you don't get it done today? Like I said, this is not for those who are desperate. There will be a tomorrow. There will be another opportunity. If you're paralyzed today, take a break, go watch a movie, come back to it with a, you know, fresh and focused mind. So, you know, just look back at your success. And the reality is, most of the success we achieve, right, is really achieved in a very small spurt or concentration of time. It just feels long because you did 10% of the work today, you took a week off, and you did another 5% the next week. So it just seems like it's all spread out. But if you look at the total amount of work put into something, it's really not that much. It's focused, concentrated energy. You look at your successes, you realize that it doesn't take much, and that there's plenty of time. We just, a lot of times, don't use it as effectively.
That's some really great advice you've given there. Shane, do you have any more questions for Sunil?
No, I just wanted to add, I think it's pretty interesting because your point about basically life is long and don't worry if you don't get it done today is quite interesting, because I kind of feel like I know a parallel to that. I think that a lot of people's reaction, especially like perfectionists, and as you say, many of us have the constant feeling that we're running out of time or that we're behind schedule and so on. The reaction is, no, I have to worry about this, right? I have to be worried about time running out, otherwise I'll be even slower. But the truth is, I think in some cases, it really can be the exact opposite. It is like that the moment you stop worrying about that, the moment you stop trying to chase after something, is when you actually free yourself up to actually be effective at it and to actually get more done than before. And yeah. I'm not sure this is a fitting metaphor, but I know something kind of similar from my experience with martial arts, where you know, when you start out, you're generally in a sparring session or something like that, you're generally nervous and you're kind of afraid. And you don't really want to let go of that nervousness, because you think, if I don't worry about what my opponent's about to do to me, he'll just walk all over me. But really what happens is, the moment you stop worrying about that, the moment you stop caring about who wins, you actually free yourself up to actually relax and actually, you know, spar with your full potential. And I think it's something similar.
I think that's a great parallel. And you know, I certainly don't want to send the wrong signal or the wrong message by indicating that, you know, there's no need to focus on your objectives and your goals. You certainly need to always keep that in the back of your mind. However, don't beat yourself up if you're not getting it done. But at the same time, if you're an entrepreneur that has fire under your belly, you're not going to let yourself give yourself excuses not to get things done. So you know what I'm saying?
It's just about not adding unnecessary stress, right? It's not, you don't have to add more stress by kind of beating yourself up about stuff.
Exactly. You've already decided on what your goals and objectives are. All you have to do now is work towards it. Now, if it's taking you longer for whatever reason, maybe you just don't feel that well that day, maybe you didn't have a good breakfast, whatever the reason is, it's okay. There will be a tomorrow. You keep pushing through that and forcing yourself, it's going to break you down. It's going to discourage you. A lot of other negative things are going to come into your life, and it's going to be much worse. So let it go, free yourself, and go with the flow.
That's awesome. That's excellent stuff. All right. Is there anything else, Paul?
No, the only thing I just remembered what I was going to say earlier,
All
25 minutes late.
right.
So yeah, we were talking about how making money online and online business isn't for the desperate. If you need money straight away, then internet marketing isn't perhaps the right thing for you. And that's certainly true of niche sites, especially nowadays, because as we already mentioned, it does take some time to gain traction. But of course, there is the whole offering a service. If you did need a bit of cash flow injection rather quickly, you could obviously offer your service, use your skills basically as your product, and offer a service and make an income, and then perhaps use some income from that to grow your niche site business. I wanted to point that out earlier, and for some reason I blooming well forgot it. But yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's a good
Paul,
point.
that's a great point. The only expansion I'll add to that is, for example, if you're a if you're selling your time, your services, you need some sort of a platform to reach your clients. So for a lot of bloggers, that's become their blog, which also takes, time to establish and develop and gain that readership. And you're right, once you have that readership, you can open up the floodgates and say, look, guys, I have X hours this week. Let's sign up for some consulting sessions. Or let's say you're a web developer, you still need some sort of a mechanism to reach your market for easy cash. So you might go on Elance and pick up some customers and start trading your hours for dollars, your time for money, which is exactly the solution you need when you're desperate, when you need that cash. So, one thing you'll notice on the blog is I never really encourage people to just give up their jobs immediately and dive into business. I mean, it's always, my approach, and this is the approach I personally took and it worked for me. Dabble in whatever you want to do on the side, prove it to yourself that it works, get comfortable with it, and when the time is right, fully transition. Now, that said, there are some personalities and some situations that, if it fits your situation, the right decision sometimes is to quit your job and dedicate yourself full time to your endeavors. But in most cases, I typically advise against that.
All right. Yeah, that's some really good stuff. I really like the direction this interview took, and thank you very much for your input on all this stuff. So Neil, that's I think it's quite different from anything we've had before. And well, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm sure that so will the audience.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and if there's any follow-up, if anybody has any questions, I'd love to continue the chatter and follow up on and provide at least my experiences and what's worked for me.
Okay, perfect.
So Neil, if they want to reach out to you, is the best place the extramoneyblog.com?
Yeah, I'd say so. So extramoneyblog.com. You're right. That's where I spend most of my time, and like I mentioned earlier, my New Authority site is where I'm also spending a lot of my time. So, if there's anybody out there that's interested in the accounting and finance profession, you can feel free to reach out to me on there as well.
And what's the URL of that again?
I'm sorry, my apologies. That one is CPA requirements HQ.com, HQ for headquarters.
Okay, awesome. Okay, thank you very much. So you can go to the extramoneyblog.com to get more of Sunil's stuff, see his posts, subscribe to his newsletter, and you can also find his Facebook and Twitter there. And we'll put a link for those who are watching this on the blog. We'll put a link below as well where you can reach Sunil. So thank you very much for your time and your wise words today.
Guys, thank you. It was a pleasure. And let me know if I can do anything else.
Awesome, thanks. All
You
right,
guys.
we'll talk to you soon. That was the I Am Impact podcast.